Hey everybody, welcome to another exciting episode of Data Exposed. I'm your host, Scott Klein, and with me today is Tommy. Tommy, why don't you take a second to introduce yourself?
Sure thing. So my name's Tommy Mullaney. I'm a program manager on the security team for Azure SQL Database, and I've been working on row-level security for the last year or so, so I'm excited to talk to you about it
yep.
today.
So we actually had you on the show, I think, May timeframe, right?
Yeah.
And I think that we had you on the show because it was just hitting, I think, public preview around that time. So we're happy to have you back, glad to have you back. Let's talk about, before we get into demos and things like that, really, in case people haven't watched the first video, what is row-level security?
Sure.
What scenarios, how do you see people using this? Mm-hmm. And in what, like financial, things like that, what scenarios you see in this? And then kind of what's new between the last time, since we saw you last time?
Totally. Okay, yeah, sure. So basically, row-level security is, it's basically, it allows you to implement what we call predicate-based access control.
Mm-hmm.
And the gist of it is, it gives you a mechanism to easily limit access to particular rows of data within your database.
Right, okay.
Based on who is executing the query, or basically anything that has to do with the execution context of that query. So it's not necessarily your username or your role memberships, although it certainly can be.
Right.
So it's very, very flexible. It's really a security programmability feature. It's designed to help developers implement secure application code more easily.
Yeah, so I can say, this group of people can only see this section, this set of rows. And I think the example you gave when you were here last time was kind of the a hospital. This wing can see these patients and this table, and these, this wing can see this set of rows for these patients, things like that. Right?
Yeah, no, you got it exactly. The possibilities are, there's lots of different scenarios where this can come into play. You can think of in a hospital, maybe nurses should only be able to see patients who are assigned to their wing within a particular time frame. If you're like a bank, for instance, maybe an analyst in one region should only be able to see financial data for their region or their department or something like that.
Okay.
Another use case that we've seen has been very, very common on Azure SQL Database in particular is the kind of multi-tenancy. You have a multi-tenant database scenario where basically every row, I have lots of different tenants, people who use my application.
Yeah.
So say I'm a SaaS developer and I have some kind of like a CRM application for tracking customer engagements and things like that. Different users log in, and they should not be able to see stuff that doesn't belong to their account,
right?
And so what you can do is you can use row-level security as a way of controlling which rows of data tenants can access.
That's an interesting one, especially from the multi-tenancy perspective, because we typically don't think at that level, right? You see, but when you get into the SaaS environment and you total multi-tenant environment, this is a perfect solution for that.
Yeah, when you have this, when you have a multi-tenant database kind of scenario, that's what this feature can really help you streamline. And lots of different use cases. It can get a lot more sophisticated and complex than that. But that's one that we've really seen come up over and over again in the way that customers are actually using the feature.
And why is that? I mean, as you're talking about that, I'm thinking it's probably much easier to implement, right? Instead of setting up like schemas or having to do all this logic in my code,
so the big value prop there is, so row-level security operates completely within the database.
Right.
And so in the past, if you wanted to do kind of this multi-tenant separation, you either would have had to kind of do some weird schema or views magic in your database that makes it really hard to upgrade and change things over time.
Yep.
Or you have to do this entirely in your application code, and that gets really onerous and actually a bit dangerous as your code base grows, you expand, did I make sure that, I'm limiting access in every single query.
Yep.
And
the overhead of that case, oh my goodness.
And so that's where people have looked to row-level security as a way of, so I can centralize everything within the database. My application code, it's now completely transparent to it, so I don't need to keep updating things all over the place.
I think that's
If I, want to, maybe some users don't just go through that one application. Maybe I also give access through Power BI or some other reporting tools.
Exactly.
The fact that the security logic is applied within the database means that you don't need to just go through your application tier in order to have that filtering applied.
Yeah.
So it's closer to the data, and that's definitely been an advantage.
And I think the great thing about this is we can apply this with a lot of overhead or performance issues to the database, right?
Yeah, no, in terms of performance, what you're going to see is basically the same as any past workaround was able to give you. Right. So, yeah, and performance is a question that really comes up an awful lot from customers. They say, okay, row-level security, what kind of performance should I expect from that? Yeah. And unfortunately, the answer is it depends, with any, you know, T-SQL constructs that do this kind of predicate-based stuff. But the good news is if you're doing something like this already, the performance you're going to see is very much analogous.
Minimal or to nothing, probably.
Yeah, sometimes better, sometimes slightly worse. Most of the time, the same.
Same,
yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
So what's new between, since we had you on last?
Yeah. So that's what we're really excited to talk about today. So the first version of RLS that we shipped earlier this year and that we talked about last time introduced what we call filter predicates.
Yeah.
And so basically the idea is you add a filter predicate on a table, and then that limits access to read operations. Okay. So anything I can select, update, or delete is automatically filtered by the security policy in the database.
Okay.
And one thing that we heard from a lot of different customers, particularly from this multi-tenant segment, is, well, the problem with that is users can still insert data that they won't be able to see afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
So filter predicates don't prevent you from inserting anything. And on top of that, for a slightly more nuanced look, they also don't prevent you from updating something you currently can see to be something that you won't be able to see afterwards. So like the classic scenario here is, okay, so I have, you know, this tenant ID, right?
Right.
I shouldn't be able to insert something for the wrong tenant.
Yeah, good point.
So filter predicates won't allow you to do that because they only apply to read operations. Yeah. That's a write operation. So that was the big point of feedback that we got there. And the thing that we're introducing now and is currently in public preview is what we call block predicates. And the idea here is rather than silently filtering which rows are visible, you actually explicitly block or raise an error when a user tries to insert or update or even delete a row that violates some predicate. It could be the exact same one that you used for your filter predicate, or it could be something completely different if you want to have kind of more nuanced logic.
Yeah, so much more granular. So I could... Because I can see that in a scenario, I can insert, but then, hey, well, why can't I see that record I just inserted, right?
Yeah, and so, I mean, we certainly don't prevent you from creating a scenario like that. It is a security programmability feature, so we don't want to limit what you can do. And there are kind of weird cases, or some of us think weird, but where you could conceivably want to have that behavior.
Right.
But for the most part, we've designed this to be really easy to integrate, especially if you're familiar with row-level security already. The same knowledge that you have for implementing filter predicates, it's the exact same kind of stuff for block
predicates. Am I just defining the filter predicate, and then that applies to the whole CRUD operation? Or are there different predicates that I have to then create?
So this is where we can jump into a demo in a minute or two that'll probably clarify things a little bit.
Okay.
But the idea is for filter predicates, what you do is you create what we call a predicate function. It's an inline table valued function. And that's where you basically define your logic, who can see what.
Okay.
And then you use that function as a filter predicate on particular tables. Now you can also use that function as a block predicate on particular tables. And so you basically, within your security policy, you say, yeah, use this function as a filter on this table, and use this function, could be the same one, as a block on also this table.
So I'm just defining one function, and I'm saying, here's in what scenarios to use this function.
Exactly. So it's very reusable. That's kind of the reason that we allowed you to abstract out that logic.
Okay.
Whereas, you know, workarounds, you don't want to have to retype that same logic all
over
the place.
It's
much better to abstract that out.
Okay.
So that's kind of been the big new thing that we've added. There's one other thing that, depending on when you're watching this video, will either be out or almost out.
Almost out.
So yeah, end of October is when we expect this one to deploy.
Right.
Is a thing called session context.
Okay.
And this, if you're familiar again with RLS in the past for this kind of middle tier application scenario where your users don't connect directly to the database through SSMS or something like that. Instead, they always go through this middle tier application.
Mm-hmm.
A really common use case that we've seen over and over again is particularly with web apps, is everybody connects to the database using the same connection string.
So it's
the same SQL user. It's done for really efficient connection pooling and all that.
Right.
But the problem from an RLS perspective is, wait, so how does the database know who from the application is actually connecting right now?
Yep, common problem.
Yeah, how do I know who to filter for? And so in the past, what we've suggested is using what's called context info. It's basically this session scoped scratch pad Basically, as soon as the application connects, before it executes any user queries, it'll set context info to the appropriate user ID or tenant ID or whatever it is that identifies the user. And then the RLS policy knows, okay, so I filter for this guy.
Now, is that passed through from the application, or where does it get that information from?
Yeah, so that's it's a T-SQL statement that your application code needs to execute before someone executes a query.
Right, okay.
And it's because we have the same connection string for everybody,
so we
need some way to identify end user is actually executing this query. And so that was kind of the approach for a while, and we heard in terms of feedback from customers is, A, this thing's a little clunky, it's this 128-byte binary blob, basically, and what's more than that, it doesn't really support key-value pairs, so if you wanted to store multiple values within it, then you're stuck in this kind of awkward parsing problem that's a little bit of a pain server-side. So what we've introduced is this new thing called session context, and it's designed to alleviate a lot of the problems that people mentioned about context info. And so far, folks we've showed it to have been pretty excited about it.
Okay.
And so it's something we're also excited about. And it's got a couple of nice properties that we'll show in the demo here.
Perfect. Okay.
That'll kind of show you why we think it's a much needed improvement over the current context info approach.
Perfect. So I think there's some interesting announcements around that. I think this will be very good. So let's just jump out and see kind of some of the new stuff that you've worked on.
All right. Let's do it. So what I'm going to do here is jump into SSMS.
Okay.
And scroll up to the top. What I've got here is basically it's a clean, empty database on up on Azure SQL DB.
Mm-hmm.
And the scenario here that I want to construct is it's like a project management SaaS application.
Right.
So we have lots of different tenants who will or customers of mine who use my application. And they use it to manage and track their projects that they have at work or wherever.
Yeah, great example. Yeah.
Yeah. So really common kind of scenario that you see there a lot. And,
okay.
And so to really simplify everything, to really so you can see this as easily as possible, we're just going to have a projects table. And
okay.
It's just a list of what are the different projects I have. You know, give them a name, a start date, and a due date, and whether they're on track or not.
Yeah. Very simple. Yeah.
Yeah. Straightforward there, and. What we're going to do is this table here is going to have a tenant ID column. I'll highlight that there real quick. And so this tenant ID column, of course, indicates which tenant each row actually belongs to, because we're all sharing the same projects table together, and you want to make sure that I'm not seeing your projects, because that would be bad.
Okay.
And so one thing I'm going to do here right off the bat, you're going to see some new syntax already. Is I'm going to create a default constraint here attached to this tenant ID column so that by default, whenever you insert a new row, it'll store the current value of the session context for this tenant ID key that I've defined.
So there's where the session context comes into
exactly.
play.
Exactly. Yeah. So you can see it here already. I'll show you how to set it in a minute. But this is how you will get values from the session context.
Okay.
And so basically, as mentioned, session context it's a much, much bigger. You can store 256 kilobytes per connection rather than just 128 bytes.
Yep, okay.
So you can store lots of stuff in there. And it's key value pairs, which is something that's really nice.
Hmm.
So what I'm going to do here is I specify this new function, session context.
Okay.
I give it the key that I want to get the value for. In this case, it's tenant ID. And because of the value is stored as a SQL variant type, you need to explicitly cast it to whatever type you have. The reason it's stored that way is for efficiency reasons. The data is actually stored as the type that it was actually created
so as. So you're creating a column called tenant ID, which is an int, but is the session context a variant? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, session context is a variant,
okay.
Which means that under the covers is stored as an int.
Okay.
So it doesn't take up any more space than that.
Okay.
But you do need to explicitly cast it to the type that you need.
Gotcha.
So, basically, that's what we're doing here. We're creating this table. We have that default constraint. That's really for my own convenience. It means that, in my application code, when I want to insert a row, I now don't need to worry about actually explicitly specifying, hey, insert it for this tenant ID.
Right.
This will actually take care of that.
Okay,
for
cool.
me. So that's just a convenience, something that I personally like to do here. The other thing I'm going to do is I'm going to insert three rows just for demonstration purposes, and then let me select from this table so you can see what we've got.
Right, okay.
So we've got this table here. Can tilt this a little bit so you can see a little better. So we've got this table here, three different rows. Two of them belong to tenant one, and one of them belongs to tenant two.
Okay.
There we go. Pretty straightforward.
Yep.
So the next thing we're going to do is we're going to create a user here for our application
to
use as a best practice. You should not have your DBO or sysadmin account in your application's connection string because if your application happens to, God forbid, be vulnerable to a SQL injection, that means really bad things can suddenly happen. So best practice here. For the demo purposes, I'm going to create it without a login. In practice, you would typically have you know, a password associated with this that you would stick into your connection string. Or you could use Azure Active Directory authentication.
Yep.
It's another totally legit way to do that too.
Yep.
So I'm going to create that user. The other thing I'm going to do is I'm going to grant select, insert, update, delete on this projects table to the application user. It's the only thing they're going to be empowered to do. But what's nice now is I can grant insert and update without having to worry about the tenant ID column, thanks to the block predicates we'll add in a bit. I'm also going to deny update on the tenant ID column because there is no, at least in my case here, there is no circumstance under which the application should be updating the tenant ID so that suddenly my project is now yours. That's, there should be a barrier there that prevents me from doing that.
That would be bad.
Yeah, and so you could totally do this using the new row level security functionality, but it doesn't really make sense to do something at the row level when you know, like, categorically always at the column level this will not be allowed.
Right,
so it's gonna be more efficient just to use a column permission here.
Yep.
So that's what we're gonna do. Let me create this user in those permissions. Cool. So now we get into the row-level security stuff. So the first thing we do, and for folks who are familiar with row-level security, this is old hat. We're going to create a separate schema to store our stuff. You don't have to do this, but again, it's a best practice to keep your RLS objects both organized and in a separate schema where people by default can't touch them or see them.
Okay.
So we're going to create a security schema here, and then we're going to create our predicate function. And again, this is an inline table-valued function. If you're familiar with RLS, you've seen this a bunch of times. And basically what we're going to do here is, in the past, this right here would have been something using context info in our scenario. Now we're going to use session context. And it's just going to be much cleaner.
Okay.
So we're specifying, we're getting, again, the key or the value stored in the session context for tenant ID. And we're going to check that against each the tenant ID for a particular row.
Okay.
Where they match, you can see the row. Where they don't match, you can't.
Can't see the row. Okay.
Exactly. So let me create those real quick. And then this is what's new. And this is what's exciting here. So in the past, when you create the security policy, all you could do is add filter predicate, this predicate function, on our projects table.
Okay.
Now we have something new. We have this thing called a block predicate. And what we're going to do here is we're going to add a block predicate, security.tenantaccess predicate, on projects. And if we just left it at that and not said anything more, then by default, this would apply to all operations. So, insert, update, delete, all of those would have this block predicate applied. In our scenario here, most of those would actually be redundant because A, the filter predicate says, well, you can't delete anything you can't see.
Right.
So that's fine. We say tenants should be able to delete their own stuff.
Yep.
For update, that's also totally fine. We don't need a block predicate on that because we have this column permission that says, hey, you can't change the tenant ID column. So that's good. So all that's really left is insert. And so what we need to do is we need to use RLS there to say that you cannot insert a row that violates this predicate function.
Okay, yes. So I can't insert into this table for rows that I can't, you know, rows that I can't see.
Exactly. It's the same function that we're using for our filter predicate.
Yep.
It's nice. We get a
but
totally
just for inserts. That. Yep.
Exactly. So if you are somebody who is already using this today and you already have, you know, your filter predicate using a function and all you want to do is say that, hey, people shouldn't be able to insert what they can't see, this is, you just literally add this line and you're good to go.
Good to go. Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect.
One thing to clarify here about this after insert, why do you have this keyword after? I'm sure some people will be wondering about that. So this basically means that the values that we're considering for the predicate are the ones that you're changing them to. So this is a little easier to understand in the context of an update. So we actually have both before update and after update.
Okay.
We only have after insert because that's the only one that logically makes sense.
Yep,
so
okay.
Before update means that we're going to evaluate the predicate against the values before we do anything.
Okay.
So what's currently there, like the existing values of the row. After update means we're going to evaluate the predicate against the values that you're trying to update them to. So for instance, a before update block predicate would say Tommy's not allowed to update rows where the salary is greater than 100. Or something like that. An after update predicate would say that you're not allowed to change the salary to be greater than
$1,000
or something like that.
Right.
So that's the subtle difference there, and that's why we have after insert here.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah. So actually can't remember if I actually executed this or not. Just to be safe, let's do it. I guess I didn't. Cool.
Okay, so we've created the policy.
Yep.
Right. So how does this affect now? How's we the user works now?
Yeah, so this is where I get to actually prove to you that I'm not just making all of this up and we have fancy syntax in here
now. Gnome under the desk.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, don't show those rows. Okay. Yeah. So let's actually show you how this works.
Okay.
So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to first impersonate our application user. In practice, you actually would connect as your application.
Yep.
This is kind of just for demo purposes. I'm going to simulate what our application would see here.
Okay.
And so the first thing we're going to do is, let's say I forgot to set the session context to anything. What happens if, you know, you just execute a query without setting the session context to anything?
Yeah.
In that case, you see no rows because by default, if you...
Engine has no idea who I am.
Exactly.
Right.
So you're going to get null.
Okay.
And none of our rows have null in there
right.
as the tenant ID. So
right.
yeah, nothing to see. So,
okay,
that's good. So then what you would do in your application code is basically every time you open a connection...
Okay. I was wondering how you said it, right?
Yeah.
There's
going
to be a way. How does it know?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. So I've shown you how to get
Aha!
the values. This is where you actually set it. So
okay.
we have this new system stored procedure here, SP set session context. And so the first thing you specify is your key. In this case, we're going to call it tenant ID. And then the second thing you specify is the value. In this case, we're going to set it as 2. And so I'm going to set it tenant ID to 2, and then I'm going to select from our projects table again, and what do
Voila,
you expect?
There you go.
You see just the row that belongs to tenant 2.
Okay.
So then the next thing I want to show you here is actually, it's a little interesting. It's something additional that we've added on here that you definitely didn't have with context info. And that's, let me highlight it here for you. That's this read-only option that we've added. And so the idea here is when you set this key value pair tenant ID equals 1, you can optionally specify a read-only parameter here. And what that means is for the duration of that logical connection, you will not be able to change that value for that key. So this key value pair, this tenant ID is now read only for the duration of this connection.
Oh, okay. So I could not call exec SP set session context again
for this
set
key.
For this key.
Yeah.
Right? So I can't change it from 1 to 2 or whatever, right?
Exactly.
All right.
And the reason that this is interesting is again, it gets back to that whole SQL injection scenario where in the past, if you're using context info, for instance,
right.
or if you didn't have this read-only parameter, then basically if you're one of your queries in your application code was vulnerable, someone could inject, set the context, tenant ID to 12 or whatever.
Right.
And then suddenly, boom, they've escalated to be someone else who they aren't. And then they're seeing rows that they shouldn't be able to see.
So which brings up a good question. This seems like it would be, I'd want to do this all the time, like a kind of a best practice, right?
Yes. If you are using the session context in this way, particularly for identifying users.
Multi-tenant this kind environment of, type of scenario.
Exactly. Yeah. A mid-tier application, and this is how you identify users. Absolutely. Set the parameter as read-only. And I guess to be clear about this, the fact it's read only for that logical connection there. So, your application code, typically you'll have like a using block, and then as soon as that block is done, the connection is called closed, and then that returns it to the pool. And that is where this gets completely reset.
Okay.
Yeah. So basically, until that happens, you can't change it. But when that happens, then you have a complete clean slate, fresh session context to work with.
Okay. And that's good. I love that because that sort of, from a security perspective, says, man, you can't mess with me.
Yeah, right. This is a big reason why we wanted to include this here, is to help mitigate and address the SQL injection angle there. So that's something that we've done that we're pretty happy with.
Love
so
that.
So let me execute that here. And
you can see number
of
1.
Of course, you can see tenant ID 1. We've set it there. And now, so I've set it as read-only this time. If I try to change it again, so right now I'm tenant 1, and I say, let's make myself tenant 2 here. Let's say I've somehow injected that through the application. Well, now you get an error because of this read-only parameter.
Good.
So that's kind of showing you how that works. So that's something that's nice, and again, like you said, best practice.
Best practice, awesome.
Absolutely. So what I'm going to do here is insert a few rows. And so the first thing we want to do is, let's say we insert without specifying any tenant ID.
Mm.
And this is where what will happen here is actually automatically it's going to insert the row with the tenant ID 1 that the current value stored in session context because of that default constraint.
Oh, that's right. When we created the table, you specified that default on
there. Exactly. Gotcha. All the way back at the beginning. So this is like a convenience. And so in my application code now, I don't actually even have to explicitly specify, hey, insert for this tenant. I know that the database is going to take care of that for me.
And what that does is it eliminates any code errors to say, oops, I accidentally inserted for the wrong tenant, or for example.
Yes. Right? Yes. The good news is we also have block predicates that will prevent errors from like from that actually doing anything wrong.
Okay, yep.
But this will simplify things, so you don't even you can kind of have the illusion that you don't even care about that.
Right. Okay.
If that's what you want. So we inserted there. I may have done it twice. we'll see when I select from the table. Looks like I did do it twice. We have two project threes. I don't have any unique constraints.
It's a demo.
Yeah, exactly. It's a demo there. We'll clean that up later.
Yeah.
So that works. If I did want to specify the tenant ID explicitly, so in this case I'm doing the same thing, except this time I'm actually saying tenant ID is one.
Right, okay.
You know, that will also work because I'm tenant ID one to the database right now. Yep. That's what's in session context. But now, let's say, you know, your application code accidentally says, well, insert for two.
Yeah.
Or even worse, you know, maliciously someone tries to inject that in there. Well, what happens now, because of the block predicate we created, is it says, hey,
that's cool.
Session context says one, you can't insert anything for two.
Yeah, because you set it to read-only and...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's read-only, so you can't change it.
Change it, but the block predicate just says, nope, we're only on...
Exactly, so it prevents you from inserting stuff that you shouldn't be able to see. So for all of the folks out there that are using RLS for these multi-tenancy scenarios, this is something that's really nice.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, you know, you've had workarounds to achieve this kind of functionality in the past, usually using either check constraints or triggers, and those are a lot of work to maintain.
Yep.
So this is, we think this is a much simpler approach.
Much, much simpler.
It's also more centralized. That really gets back to the whole value prop.
Much cleaner too. I really much cleaner.
So that's what we're happy about there. One other thing that I just want to showcase here to really drive the point home is what happens if I said, all right, fine, I can't insert anything for tenant two right now. Darn. Well, I'm going to delete everything that belongs to them. Haha. And what's interesting here is, and this is actually the case today, even if you're using a filter predicate, you can't do anything because the filter predicate will say, well, you don't have any rows that are available for tenant two to delete in the first place. So,
nothing there.
So the point that this is trying to make here is that filter predicates and block predicates are complementary. They're meant to be used together.
Okay.
Filter predicates are for basically accessing rows, whether it's select, update, or delete.
Right.
And block predicates are for explicitly blocking with an error certain operations or actions that you don't want users to be able to do at a per row level.
Okay, cool.
So that's the difference there. Again, we didn't delete anything that belonged to tenant two. We can't see anything for tenant two. We can't insert anything for tenant two. So you have that kind of isolation in there.
Okay.
So that's the gist of that. Let me revert out of our application context there for a minute. So I have this whole second half to this demo where we say, all right, fine, that's the simple thing. What if I wanted to make this a little bit more sophisticated?
Yeah.
And maybe I don't just identify users by their tenant ID, but my tenants actually have their own, you know, multiple users who some of them have read access, others have read-write access, and that's a little bit more of a real-world kind of scenario.
Yep.
In the interest of time, I don't want to go through all of that here, but I think what we can do is we can post this script up online and give everybody access to it, and then folks can kind of run through and play with it.
Yep, I think that's the right thing to do, and we'd love to have you back, and maybe even go into that part a little deeper.
Would love to. This is a lot of fun. So yeah, that's kind of the gist of it. Well, I guess one last thing I'll skip through to the end here real quick. You can see that's the new stuff that we're not covering here. So these are not new. These are two system views that exist. They're basically to help you kind of get a sense for what security policies do I have and what predicates do I have on what tables. There's also a UI in the Object Explorer, but we'll save that for another time. Just to kind of show you basically the information that's encapsulated in these views.
Nice.
And so this should all be familiar. The new thing that we've added here basically is in the sys.securityPredicates table, we now identify the type of the predicate and also the operations to which it applies. And that's
nice.
You know, obviously because we have multiple types of predicates now, we want to give you a way to tell which is which.
That's perfect.
So that's the new stuff.
Yeah, you can see that through the portal if you want, but if you're already in SSMS and want a quick view, right through there.
Yeah, these views are going to be the easiest way to kind of script out and take a look at what's what's going on there. So Yeah, awesome. That's the gist of the demo.
Love it. So I think this is fantastic. Just how easy it is to get, you know, more granular into, you know, through the whole CRUD operations and limit, you know, real world security. This is great. Matt, thank you so much for coming. Love to have you back to discuss this second demo in a little more detail. We will post the script out there. So if anybody that's watching wants to have access to that, start playing with it, feel free to do that. We'll post it on the thing. But Matt, thanks for coming. And we'll see you next time. Thank you.